Okay, I'll call the meeting to order. The regular assembly meeting is on July 15th, 2020. This meeting was scheduled originally for July 6th, but due to various circumstances, it ended up being pushed back to today. I would like the clerk to please call the roll.
Brandy?
Here.
Mark?
Here.
Bob?
Here.
Jeff?
Here.
Jay?
Here.
Taylor?
Excused. Excuse me.
And Chelsea?
Here.
Okay, we have six assembly members present. So we can continue. We have a quorum. And it's now time for the voluntary Pledge of Allegiance. I'll start it off. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. That brings us to item three on today's agenda, and that is approval of minutes. There are no minutes presented today for approval. So that brings us to item four, amendment and approval of today's meeting agenda. I'd entertain a motion to either amend or approve as presented.
So moved.
Second. Motion's been made and seconded to approve as presented, I believe. Are there any proposed amendments today to today's agenda? Okay, hearing none, we'll move forward as it's been presented. And today we have a public hearing on Ordinance 2020-19, an ordinance amending Borough Code Chapter 3.72 to provide for civil emergency provisions. And following that, since there are no bid awards, it'll be persons to be heard related to items on the agenda and unrelated to any items on today's agenda. And for the people listening that plan on calling in and testifying, I would remind you that, one, there's a five-minute limit, and the clerk will be keeping time on that. And I'd like all testimonies to be kept civil. You're addressing the whole assembly, not pointing out any one assembly member, not questioning anybody's character in any of the your testimony. And if a person testifying gets out of line, I will get their attention and ask them to change their testimony, and if not, they will be muted and we'll move to the next person. So that is how we will move forward with this. And so I now open up the public hearing. Is there anybody online, Debbie, to testify there on the public hearing?
Yes, Mayor Jensen, it looks like we have five callers to testify under the public hearing. And Kevin, I would ask if you would please unmute Spencer Cheney.
Thank you. One moment. That line's open.
Hi, how's it going, everybody? It's a what if. It's what if. What if it does come back with the Spanish flu? What if it doesn't? I mean, these businesses that you guys are to deem essential or non-essential and close them down, this is these people's livelihoods we're messing with here. I mean, who's going to pay their bills? Are you guys going to foot the bills for the people when you shut down their business? I mean, so you guys are worried about the pot shop, the liquor store, and all those essentials being open. Honestly, there's more of a problem with alcoholism than there is with COVID-19 in the town. I mean, a blind man could see it. It's just a shame that anybody that they would even try to pass an amendment such as this. If you were to go and dig up dictators or leaders from the world's gone by, if you were to dig up communist dictators, they would be going, yeah, that's a really good idea. But that's not what America stands for. If the virus was to start devastating the community, then maybe we could take a fast action and everybody could get on board with it. But right now, it's not at that point. The hospitals haven't been filled. No one has been dying. I mean, I know there have been deaths from COVID-19, but not as it was originally led on to believe. And at first, everybody was scared. And I just don't understand why this has to be even considered. I mean, that's just all I really got to say, is that if you shut everything down, who's going to pay for people's bills? Who's going to feed their families because you shut their business down because you deem it unessential? That's just ridiculous.
Okay, thank you.
That's pretty, yep.
Thank you for your testimony.
You.
You're welcome. Clerk Thompson, can you move to the next caller in line, please?
Yes. Kevin, could you please unmute Ron Ware?
Mr. Ware's line is open.
Okay. Well, my name is Ron Ware, and I'd like to express my beliefs in regard to the COVID-19 and the current direction the Assembly seems to be leaning towards. I will start with masking. I do wear a mask sometimes for very short periods of time. That is my choice, and that's the way it should be. This Assembly will not get up and dress me every morning. If you listen to the news outlet, you will hear about the huge increases in positive cases. However, as many scientists have pointed out, that is in large part because of the tremendous increase in testing. Now we could throw numbers at each other all day. It will not do any good if we're not willing to listen to each other. I ask you to keep an open mind in your consideration and responses to the current situation. While the virus is real, it is not as dangerous as we initially stated. Contact tracing within our community, I believe, has shown zero spread. Asymptomatic testing has provided a couple of out-of-town positives to people that didn't even know they were sick. In short, please listen to your constituents and business owners, the people that you voted, that voted you in, and do not tread on our rights as Americans. Let us choose if we're going to wear a mask or not, and if we decide to gather, let us do that too. All right, thank you. I'm done.
Thank you, Mr. Ware, for your testimony. Clerk Thompson, will you let the next person online?
Yes, Kevin, if you could please unmute Dana Tinas.
That line's open.
Great. Okay. Can you guys hear me?
Loud and clear.
Good. All right, folks. Under newly proposed 3.72.040, where does the borough presume to draw its authority to make proclamations with a force of law that supersede any conflicting provision of law? I am not seeing that authority in Alaska Statute 26.23.140, the local disaster emergencies statute. And then, under 3.72.060, Section A4, what is this about calling up auxiliary law enforcement agencies and organizations within and without the borough to assist in preserving and keeping the peace? I can't believe this is for real. What are you folks expecting to happen here in Petersburg? What's the worst that our 3,000 residents could do? You want us to trust your tiny body of elected assembly members, but how about you show some trust in us? Thank you. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Dana, for your testimony. Clerk Thompson, is there someone else on the line willing to participate in the public hearing today?
Oh, whoops. Yes, there is. Kevin, if you could please unmute Angela Davis.
That line's open.
Hello, this is Angela Davis. I'm calling in today. First of all, I'd like for the record to state that I would rather be there in person to tell you guys my opinions on what's going on with the city right now. I would like to begin by speaking against the ordinance 2020-19. This ordinance is a huge overreach for local government. The elected assembly members are the only individuals who've been elected to make educated votes and decisions about how the borough is ran. Allowing one non-elected individual to possess all control over this borough is unsatisfactory. Where are the checks and balances? Allowing the borough manager or the incident command officer to enact curfews and have the ability to close down non-essential and essential businesses and probably mandate masks due to erroneous, quote, wildfire spread at the drop of a hat is irresponsible. Any assembly member who votes for this should be recalled. This is not why we voted for each and every one of you. The community is tired of hearing that you're all trying to help us and do what's best for us and our health. If this is what you truly believe is going on, I suggest you take a step back and reevaluate why you're on the assembly. The second matter I'd like to voice my opinion about is on the letters which you'll be discussing regarding the potential face mask requirement. I am ashamed at the medical staff, which is advising the incident command team and therefore advising each of you. As stated in Mr. Hofstetter's letter, we have been in this global pandemic for 6 months, and it's spreading like wildfire. Himself and his medical staff are recommending a second face mask mandate. Why? We've had 6 positive cases for Petersburg residents, 2 which were never in Petersburg when they tested positive, and 4 out-of-towners who are following all state and local travel and business plans and protocols. So I'm not clear where the Petersburg wildfire is. And if you haven't noticed around town that since the Alaska numbers have been increasing, more and more individuals who feel the need to wear a mask do. So why mandate it? I don't think this town needs any additional friction added to their plates. But I would like to emphasize on the 6 positives with a population of 3,266 community residents, that works out to 0.001%. Again, I'm going to repeat, 0.001% of a wildfire. We all have the rights to wear a mask or not wear a mask. Those who feel their risk is higher, by all means, wear a mask and stay home. The rest of us would like to get on with life. We want to send our kids back to school and rebuild the businesses which this financial destruction has done to all the businesses in town and the fishing industry. Some of you are very fortunate to work for the federal, state, or local government. You don't have to choose if your livelihood is worth a 30-year loan to potentially save your business, be able to pay your bills, and support your family. All along, while one unelected person has the power to shut it all down at the drop of a hat. The governor said it best in his press conference a few days ago. It was quoted, Mr. Dunleavy and several top health officials said the state's hospital situation is solid, and he isn't going to use, quote, hammer tactics to respond to the rising cases in Alaska. He is asking Alaskans to voluntarily do everything they can to slow the spread. If my recollection serves me right, Petersburg Medical Center received around $5 million for this wildfire crisis. So why are they not prepared for it? Maybe those of you who have been elected by community members who had faith in you should in turn have faith in those who elected you to do what they think is best. And at the end, they voted for you. Thank you for listening to my opinions, and I urge all of you to vote no on this ridiculous ordinance 2020-19, and that you will not entertain the idea of mandating masks again in Petersburg. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Davis. Clerk Thompson, is there anyone else on the line that wanting to participate in this public hearing?
Yes, Mayor Jensen, it looks like we have 2 more callers. Kevin, if you could please unmute Melinda Olson.
Ms. Olson's line's open. Line's open.
Good afternoon. I am I'm reading this letter as a representing community members listed here. Susan Burrell, Melinda Olson, Francis Kelly, Ken Walters Olson, Richard Cheney, Lori Hofstede, Kelly Berkeley, Lawrence Hofstede, Ken Penis, Ray Wilkerson, Jason Miller, Tim Wilkerson, Wayne Matteson, Jessica Ray Cheney, Gwen Samuelson-Jones, Courtney Johnson, Lynette Odegaard, Jake Wilkerson, Bryce Wickersham, Kimberly Simbahan, Keith Billy, Nancy Hosier, Maureen Floyd, Teresa Phillips, Richard Burke, Joseph Pruth, and Chet Billy. And I'm reading on Ordinance 2020-19. So I'm going to read the parts of the ordinance, and then we'll have what we are concerned about. So on 3.72.020, sub-emergency preparedness and emergency service office established, the borough manager is the civil and emergency preparedness the borough manager being able to have all that power, and that he can designate whomever he wants as an incident commander shall exercise the authority and discharge the responsibility vested in him or her by applicable local, state, and federal law. We believe that this new ordinance gives the borough manager or incident commander designee way too much authority over the community of Petersburg. Having a group of non-elected people for the borough manager to consult with tragic times makes more sense than one man having so much power over us. And yes, we understand the Assembly can override and overreach borough managers or incident commanders, but in a disaster, one might not be able to do that or get a quorum to address this issue. There needs to be more checks and balances. We have seen how one political faction rules the roost, and that is not always good for our community. The designee part is very vague, so the city manager can just pick anyone, choose to fill that spot, his sister, his wife, or anyone. It doesn't even need to be someone from here. Can a group of community volunteers could be established for such a thing? The next point we'd like to talk about is the emergency proclamation, which is pursuant to the authority granted here under and in Alaska Statute 2623.140. Whenever the borough manager determines that a civil emergency exists, he or she may declare by proclamation the existence of the emergency. Any proclamation issued pursuant to this chapter shall have the force of law and shall supersede any conflicting provisions of law during an emergency declared pursuant to the chapter. The state statute AS 2623-140, local disaster emergency, an order or proclamation declaring, continuing, and terminating a local disaster emergency shall be given prompt and general publicity and shall be filed promptly with the Alaska Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management and the appropriate municipal clerk. Nowhere in the state statute AS 2623-140 does it give anyone the authority to make any law that shall supersede our rights as U.S. citizens. Also, the next one is 372.150, dissemination and posting of emergency proclamations. These proclamations of an emergency declaration or any emergency order issued pursuant thereto shall be posted on the borough website and at such other places in the borough as many as may be directed in the proclamation. It shall also be provided and any newspapers or general circulation published in the borough and radio stations which broadcast within the densely populated areas of the borough. What if the towers go down? The posting of emergency proclamations should be set forth now. We would all like that transparency well in advance of a disaster. As an example, an earthquake. People are panicked and they know not where to go to find out what to do. Designated spots can be remembered, post office, grocery store, courthouse. We would like to see these things lined out in these letters, in this ordinance. More transparency again. 3.72.060, imposition of orders during period of emergency. Section A, subsection 2, order the following to close and remain closed until further order for the period of the emergency. Under A, B, and C, list all different kinds and types of establishments when it should just read any and all businesses established.
Melinda, you have 30 seconds.
Okay. Basically, I just want to say we cannot imagine that this is even acceptable. So we just want more transparency. We don't want you guys to have this overreach of power. It's not necessary. We've been doing fine as a community. Again, like somebody else read a few minutes ago, we'd love it if you could trust us to do the right thing and not be necessary to step in. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Olson. Clerk Dawson, is there anyone else that would like to participate in this public hearing?
Yes, there is. Kevin, could you please unmute Joanne Tinas?
That will handle.
I was only going to be here to listen.
Oh, I apologize. I didn't read the notes. I'm sorry. Kevin, if you could please instead unmute Nancy Hoshar.
That line's open.
Hello. I am calling in to just express my opinion and concern over Ordinance 2020-08. The language of it is very concerning within the scope of the issue it's being revised for, namely COVID-19, or any other emergency for that matter. We've all watched our world as we know it turn upside down in direct relation to the people's reactions to this governors and mayors across the United States taking power into their hands and acting in ways that most Americans wouldn't have been able to envision previous to this. Arbitrary enforcement such as governors in Michigan and Oregon saying no buying paint and only certain peoples of colors can wear masks. These crazy examples and many, many more are what worry me and others about giving one person or a group of people this kind of power. The language in this ordinance giving the incident commander and his designees, whoever he chooses, the power at will to create enforceable laws that supersede our existing laws is a frightening thing. We've already lost so much. Businesses have collapsed. Kids have been stuck at home, some not in good situations. No schools, no sports, etc. Everyone has already given up huge parts of our lives. We've changed how we shop, how we interact, how we go about our routines. The rate of COVID in our town is proof that we, the people of Petersburg, have flattened the curve here. It only makes sense that with the increased testing and influx of people to our town this summer, that there is a couple more cases. It has been months, and we see no community spread. Because of the extreme polarization that COVID has brought to our community, any kind of ordinance like this must be held up with strong supports of accountability, of which I see none written into this ordinance. No matter how good of a character a person has, when someone, or specifically when a group of people are given this kind of power, as in the language that's in this ordinance, there needs to be accountability, strong supports of checks and balances. We, the people of Petersburg, should be included into this kind of check and balance system. We must err on the side of the freedom of choice and trust versus control and authority. One fosters support and appreciation, and the other fosters fear and discord. I took that from a quote from Jay Tinas this morning on Facebook. That we need to be left a voice also. Regarding the masks, the scientific evidence mounts daily that masks in the public sector do not do what we think they do, prevent or stop the spread of COVID. In fact, opposite evidence is daily showing that the harm that masking can bring. Also, daily grows the division between the people in this town over this issue. No school, ballet, parks, rec, baseball, co-op, library, on and on. We know how to wash our hands and how not stand too close to somebody. We know that our immune systems must have viruses to build and keep us healthy. We for sure know how to keep the vulnerable safe, just like we always have. To tell us we must wear a mask when the science has shown that they are ineffective at best is, in my opinion, ridiculous. To tell us that we must mask our little ones is unacceptable. There is such a divide in our community over this that the hate flies daily online. Censorship happens regularly, and no one who differs from the narrative that masks save lives even feels safe in Petersburg to express a different view. This is our home. Adding ordinances and mandates on top of this highly hateful political atmosphere is not going to better it or make it safer. And safety is what this meeting is about. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Clerk Thompson, is there anyone else that would like to participate in the public hearing?
There is not.
Okay. With that being said, the public hearing on Ordinance 2020-19 is now closed. That brings us to the next item on today's agenda, and that is persons to be heard related to items on today's agenda. Are there any callers in the queue for that?
There are not, Mayor Jensen.
Okay, that brings us to the next item on the agenda, which is persons to be heard on items unrelated to agenda, on today's agenda. Are there any callers for that?
There are not.
Okay, well, that moves us to item 9, board, commission, and committee reports. There are none. Consent agenda, there is no items on the consent agenda. Brings us to item 11, report of other officers. And the first person to speak today, report of other officers, is the Petersburg Medical Center CEO, Mr. Hofstetter. Mr. Hofstetter, are you available?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you, Phil. You're on.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
So just a couple of updates related to the hospital. You know, we have a number of things that are that we've been working through from an operational standpoint. We have we still can see a continued reduction of services, and we're trying to ramp up our accessibility to those services, including prevention visits. We are seeing trends in home care, home health, that have increased in the last couple of months. A lot of that related to the inability to access the clinic. We're trying to access those types of visits in home health, and that's definitely been an area of increase. Our staff have been really it's unprecedented as far as overrun with workload related to asymptomatic testing. So we've been scaling up our asymptomatic testing at the airport, in the community, within our hospital, to try to isolate and track the virus, make sure that we stop it before there is any kind of spread. And one of the biggest issues we're seeing right now is turnaround time from the state, not just in Petersburg, but from the state and national standpoint. There's a huge increase in testing, and so a lot of the commercial labs have been concerned about or having a backlog of availability of testing turnaround, and we're seeing upwards of 7 days to 14 days of turnaround time. Obviously, you see it from my letter that I submitted. There's still some concerns that from a hospital standpoint, and looking at the data from CMS, looking at some of the trends that we're seeing nationally and in the state, there's a lot of concerns. I know the recommendations seen in there are not a very popular one. But it is, from a medical standpoint, you know, alarming when we're looking at trends, not just in the state but outside the state. And what we're dealing with is a delayed response, and it's very, very difficult to act quickly when you're looking at a virus that has, you know, a 14, you know, day lead time on when you can track it or have symptoms and spread it. So so far, I agree, we've done a great job in squashing it and tracking it, isolating it, doing contact tracing. But those are things that, as things uptick, we are concerned about it from the hospital standpoint. Budget, we have a budget that we submitted, we're fortunate to have some federal assistance funding, that which we've been using quite a bit on offsetting the offset of revenue, which as a result of our decreased operational capacity has resulted in a downward trend. We're trying to turn that around and use the funding to do things like telehealth, home monitoring program, increasing access to care using other technology and other methods, working on infection control and asymptomatic testing. Those are the highlights from the medical center. Again, I'm here for any questions.
Is there any questions of Mr. Hofstetter from the Assembly?
Mr. Mayor?
Member Mucci?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Hey, Phil, can you enlighten me just a little bit about the additional services that have been reduced or decreased because of your additional work?
Sure. We've had to reduce therapy services. We've had to reduce chiropractic services, our prevention clinic services. We use a color code system in our hospital, so when there's an uptick in cases or if there's a higher risk, we have some more restrictions. We also have mandated by CMS on the long-term care side. So there's also a low census right now, not a lot of waiting list or folks coming into long-term care, and that's not just a Petersburg, that's in the statewide as well. And swing bed as a reduction for routine services like knee replacements, hip replacements. Often we have people coming in to Petersburg to rehab and do some of those services related to that in our inpatient unit. That's called the swing bed program. And because not many elective surgeries are occurring in the state or it's reduced, that has a trickle-down effect to us.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions from, excuse me, assembly members of Mr. Hofstetter? I have one question for you, Mr. Hofstetter, if no one else does. So in your facility there, do you do testing on all your employees on a regular basis? I'm just curious how the facility is approaching that.
Yeah, it's a good question. We've been getting long-term care. We've started a lot sooner, and where we're testing because of supplies, we were not able to test everyone. Now we do have the capacity to have supplies, and we just recently tested employees, mostly related to in the facility. So we're trying to get everyone on the schedule. Right now what we're bumping up against, too, is that our lab is completely inundated and then turnaround time. You know, how effective is asymptomatic test is if we don't get the turnaround time. But we have instituted a schedule for staffing, yes.
Okay. And a follow-up to that question is, any of the tests that you perform, including at the airport or for your staff or people that – come in that show symptoms, is there a financial aid to the medical center, federal money that you get for each of these, or is it depends on what the criteria the testing would fall under?
It depends on the criteria. For symptomatic testing, I believe we can use the Financial CARES Act or federal assistance. We've received a couple of federal aid. One is the payroll protection. And that's specific to staffing and payroll. With some of the other funding, we can implement and use that. Primarily, we're using it as an offset of deferred revenue. So basically, because of our reduced census in inpatient and long-term care, we have no income coming in, basically. We have reduced income coming in quite a bit. Related to asymptomatic testing, we have mixed review on whether we can use that federal funding for asymptomatic testing. We certainly are not making any money off of it. We're barely break even on anything related to asymptomatic testing, and it's very difficult to not just prepare all the specimens and send them out, but our staffing up at the airport and staffing in-house at the respiratory clinic, our staffing in the lab has been, it's been a really big struggle. And if there's nothing else, I'll say I'll commend our lab staff for working so diligently and working so hard.
Okay, thank you for answering those questions. And I don't have any other questions. And I'll ask one more time. Any other assembly members have any questions of Mr. Hofstetter? Okay, thank you, Phil. Hearing none, that moves us on to Assembly and CEPA Board Member Lynn has a report to give to the Assembly. Member Lynn, are you there?
I am, thank you. Yes, the Board, I want to talk particularly about our submarine cable. The Board met a couple weeks ago. We've had and reviewed the bids and recommendations from staff on the submarine cable. We had three bids to replace the submarine cable, two of them from Chinese firms, one from a Japanese firm. The one from a Chinese firm, it was a non-responsive bid, so it got rejected. The two of them then got the one Chinese firm and the other one, the Japanese firm, Sumitomo, was the other firm that we looked at, or the staff looked at. They went through 5,900 pages of specs to look at this. the bids, and we looked at it from the standpoint of replacement, total replacement of the cable, and to repeat of some of the things I've talked about before, is that on this cable, all three phases are in one cable, not three separate cables. A couple things I didn't realize. One is that there are no stock cables, so to speak, so that the cable that will be laid hasn't even been made yet. So that has to be made. And then it goes through a process, a testing process, to make sure that, you know, it's going to transmit. There's a degassing process. I mean, it's quite involved to make sure that before that cable gets laid under the ocean, that it's suitable for our needs. When the staff looked at it, Sumitomo was not the lowest bidder, but based on everything else in the bids and looking at other work they've done in the United States, they by far have the best track record. They're a well-respected outfit. They have a big subsidiary here in the United States down in the Seattle area. At any rate, the board has chosen to award to Sumitomo. There are a whole list of questions. The staff has about 30 questions that have to be resolved with Sumitomo, and then Sumitomo has a bunch of questions too before we go on with this. We're looking at a price tag of somewhere between $9 and $11 million to replace this cable. We do not have, I'll check that, we could pay for that based on, you know, some money we have saved and some transfers. But one of the things the board is really concerned about is having money available for another emergency like this. So I think what we're going to do is that we've asked the staff to go back and take a look to see what we can do in terms of bonding and using some financing and so forth. We still do not know what we're going to get from the insurance. We won't know that until that cable is pulled off the bottom and you can see what caused the problem to begin with. So long and the short is we'll have to pay up front, and then we'll get some reimbursement on it. Time frame. The time frame we're looking at, we're still hoping that it can be done this fall before the winter weather sets in. But that's still kind of questionable. And with that, I don't have anything else to add on it. I might, if Carl is on the line, Carl, do you have anything you would add to what I said?
Thank you, Member Lynn. No, I do not have any comments. Thank you.
Okay. And with that, I'll open it. Does the Assembly have any questions for me?
Well, I'd like to thank you, Member Lynn, for giving us that information, and that hopefully we're not overly optimistic by thinking we could get something done this fall or winter, but, you know, it sounds like quite a project. Any other questions for Mr. Lynn?
Mr. Mayor?
Member Mucci?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, Bob, I appreciate the update. Very informative. Would there be any, has the SEPA board talked about a rate increase to help pay for this $9 to $11 million repair of the cable? Or not repair, but update of the cable? Thank you.
That's a good question. The answer is, yes, we've talked about it, but right now we're looking at, we wanted to hold, with everything else that's going on and businesses being down, you know, and stuff, we wanted to hold the rates the same as we have them, the wholesale rates, as long as we possibly can. We are going to have to look at that, though, sometime down the road, maybe a couple years down the road. I'm thinking right now that we'll have to do some kind of a rate study to go along with it. I think some of the other board members might be about the same place I am. Because I think we also have to look at, we have other replacement things that needs to be done on a number of the lines, as well as some of the other submarine cables that are beginning to wear down. They're at least 30 years old. And so, yeah, we're going to have to look at that in the longer term. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
Any other questions for Member Lynn? Okay, seeing none, hearing none, I guess, can't see you from the phone. that brings us to the mayor's report. And this mayor's report was actually put together by Vice Mayor Stanton Greger. It was supposed to be presented at the July 6th meeting. So, and I don't really have anything as mayor to report, but if Member Stanton Greger, Vice Mayor Stanton Greger, would like to present this as he had it put together, that would be fine with me. Member Stanton Greger, if you would.
Sounds great. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Assembly appreciates the efforts made by Petersburg residents and current visitors to follow state directives and be respectful of each other. A link to all state directives and other COVID-19 information may be found on the borough's website at www.ci.petersburg.ak.gov. Click on the COVID-19 information hub on the home page. The CDC shares the following regarding face coverings. Cloth face coverings may help prevent people who have COVID-19 from spreading the virus to others. Wearing a cloth face covering will protect people around you, including those at high risk for severe illness from COVID-19 and workers who frequently come into close contact with other people, e.g. in stores and restaurants. Cloth face coverings are most likely to reduce the spread of COVID-19 when they are widely used by people in public settings. The spread of COVID-19 can be reduced when cloth face coverings are used along with other preventative measures, including social distancing, frequent hand washing, and cleaning, disinfecting frequently touched surfaces. Again, that comes from the CDC website. Next order of business is the Borough Assembly wishes to recognize and thank all retail workers in Petersburg who risk their health to help the rest of our residents receive goods necessary for their comfort during the ongoing pandemic. I think that population is often thankless work, so know that your efforts are Petersburg Borough is seeking letters of interest from qualified borough residents to serve on the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board until the October 6, 2020 municipal election. I believe there are 5 vacant seats at this point, and letters of interest should be submitted to Clerk Thompson at the borough offices located at 12 South Nordic Drive by sending to P.O. Box 329, Petersburg, AK 99833, or by emailing to dthompson@petersburgak.gov. And that is all. Thanks, Mark.
Okay, thank you, Vice Mayor Stanton Greger. And so far,
Mr. Mayor?
We've received 2 people interested in those 5 positions. Member Tremblay, you have wanted to interject something?
Yeah, I didn't know if you would be covering the meeting, giving an update on the meeting with Congressman Young in this.
I was going to do it on the next, on Monday.
Okay, just checking.
Yep. So, all right, thanks for asking. Yeah, I talked to the clerk about it this morning. So that brings us to the manager's report. I don't see anything listed here. Mr. Giesbrecht, do you not have a written report today?
Mayor Jensen, he does not have a written report. He actually was not going to be in attendance at the meeting on the 6th.